You're listening to Work in Progress. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation. Work in Progress explores the rapidly changing workplace through conversations with innovators, educators, and decision-makers, people with solutions to today's workforce challenges. Joining me today is Diego Cartagena, the president and CEO of BetZetic. BetZetic is an LA-based nonprofit legal aid organization, and they assist undocumented immigrants, low-wage workers, homeless families, and small business owners. Diego, thank you for joining me.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
You know, I don't know, people outside of LA may not know BetZetic. It was formed 40 years ago by a group of Jewish lawyers and law students to represent some older Jewish residents with housing and rent disputes. Now, over the years, it's grown to be a much larger organization. Tell us a little bit about how that works and who you're working with these days. I know I listed a few of the groups, but I think you do a lot more than that.
Yeah, so our agency has grown since the first days when the volunteers that established BetZetic opened its doors. As you noted, at that moment in time, the issue that was top of mind for everyone and that everyone needed help with was housing. There were many Holocaust survivors who were facing evictions from their apartments. If you fast forward to today, while we still have many volunteers that assist us in our mission, we have a staff of, at this point, about 90 full-time employees, with about 45 of us being full-time staff attorneys. And so those are individuals who handle matters ranging from elder abuse prevention cases. So for example, we help older individuals secure an elder abuse restraining order, to conservatorship matters, which is they are cases where one adult needs to assume custody over another adult because that adult is incapacitated in one way or another. You mentioned our employment rights work. That's something that we're very proud of. We help employees who allege that they have not been paid minimum wage overtime. And we are one of the only legal aids that has a tax program. So we're able to assist low-wage workers who have tax controversy matters before the IRS or state franchise tax board. And then we also help with, to this day, homelessness issues. For those of you who are keeping tabs, whether on the LA Times or other newspapers, homelessness is a very serious issue here in Los Angeles. And so we are part of a large collaboration of legal services organizations and other social service agencies that are working day in and day out to help homeless individuals secure housing or to prevent those who are in precarious housing situations from losing their housing.
And another group that you represent are the small business owners and entrepreneurs. I find that particularly interesting and possibly for audience as well, because in these pandemic times, it seems to me that there are a lot of issues that they probably need help with, you know, getting loans, paying bills, rent, and that. What kind of experiences are you hearing about out there?
Yeah, you're right. Under COVID-19, it has been incredible the amount of pressure that small businesses are under. From the very start of the pandemic, having to weather the complete shutdown of small businesses, to then trying to figure out how to apply for a PPP loan, for example. So the issues that we have seen, number one, the most common issue is commercial real estate. We have so many small business owners where the largest line item in their budget is their monthly rent, and they are simply unable to keep up with the rent. And we were lucky in California that we had a rent moratoria that applied to commercial leases along with residential leases. But the confusion and the questions still abound, right? So there are questions as to, do I have to pay my rent? Can I get a rent abatement or a rent deferral? There are some business owners who have decided, I just cannot have a brick and mortar presence. And so I am going to step away from my lease in hopes that once the COVID-19 is all said and done with, they can reopen their business in a new location. So in some instances, we're negotiating kind of an exit strategy on behalf of the small business owner. The other issues, sadly, that we're seeing, we are seeing some cases of bankruptcy filings. But I want to end on a positive note. We are also seeing a lot of entrepreneurship. And so we are seeing businesses that are, for example, shifting from a brick and mortar presence to an online presence. And so we're counseling them on, for example, sales tax issues when you're selling goods across state lines. We're counseling them on the ins and outs from a legal perspective of marketing online. And various other issues related to that, that really are an expression of their entrepreneurship.
And entrepreneurship is seen for a lot of people who are low income or in poverty as a way out of that. So it seems that there really is a strong need for that.
Exactly. For those listening that may be wondering, well, gosh, what's a legal aid doing getting involved with small businesses? From our perspective, it's all part of the same community and all part of the same effort to support those community members, right? Because these local businesses, number one, the clients that we see are local community members who have had a dream, right? I'll give you one example. A husband and wife that worked at a bakery for decades, saving every single penny, nickel, and dime until they were able to purchase their own bakery. And so this was a realization of these, you know, blue-collar working individuals being able to take the next step in their dream. And from there, what they were able to do is they were able to turn around and employ local community members in this little bakery that they had bought inside of a grocery store. So you see the economic impact of supporting small businesses within these communities, low-income communities, communities of color, communities where, by and large, you know, this is one of the best ways of bringing money into the community.
I've also heard of businesses, small business owners who they're done. They've run their business for 40 years. They don't want to keep running it. And maybe they don't have family that they're going to turn it over to, but that some of the employees can come in and purchase it.
Yeah, that's been one of the most interesting scenarios that we have seen. So you're exactly right that we have a number of small business owners that they have had a run at it. They have really enjoyed it, but it's time for them to move on. And for many of them, they're about to realize that dream of being able to retire. Now, we've heard stories in the past where some business owners, literally what they do is they close the door for the last time and that's it. There's another option.
And then people get become unemployed.
Exactly. Exactly. And so there's another option there for these business owners, which is to sell their business to the employees. And there are tools in California. For example, California has something called the California Cooperative that allows the employees to buy the business and set it up the business as a co-op so that all of the employees can participate in the profits of the business. So it's wonderful. It keeps the business up and running. It keeps the employees employed. And in fact, increases their economic stability because now they are owners of the business. Now they're even more invested, literally, right, in the business.
Have you heard that a lot of small businesses have been still having trouble getting the funds from the PPP loans?
Yeah, sadly, that is very much the case. And what seems to have happened, and it's been now documented in various reports and newspapers, that essentially those businesses that had an existing relationship with a financial institution were able to very easily tap into the PPP loans. And that has a dramatic impact, particularly when you consider small businesses that are owned by people of color. You know, there are various statistics out there that show that if you are Black, if you are Latinx and apply for a business loan, your chances of securing that loan are dramatically lower. And so you don't have as high of an incidence of connection between the small businesses and some traditional financial institutions. And so when the PPP loan came about, it wasn't as easy as picking up the phone to your, you know, your banker that you've been working with for years, if not decades, to say, hey, what's this loan about? How can I go applying for it? So many small businesses missed out. And in fact, I know that there is a significant debate going on in Congress right now about rectifying that and making sure that small businesses have a much greater opportunity of applying for stimulus funding during the next round.
I know you've partnered here in Los Angeles with the city to help speed up a lot of the processes around relief for small businesses. What are you doing in that respect?
We're very proud of our partnership with the city of Los Angeles, and this is a partnership that has been dubbed LA Represents. What happened there was that the mayor of Los Angeles and the city attorney of Los Angeles, Mike Fuhrer, they had a vision. They realized at the beginning of COVID-19 that there were going to be many Angelenos impacted in various ways by this pandemic, and that many of them would need access to a lawyer. So for example, you're facing eviction. You have just been let go from your job and you're trying to apply for unemployment insurance. Sadly, incidents of domestic violence, questions about your utilities. And for many individuals, the way to resolve that problem is to have access to an attorney that can inform you about your rights and can help you take the next steps to correct whatever legal issue you're facing. But the problem there is that, and this has been documented by the State Bar of California, the number one hurdle to people accessing free legal services from organizations like Betzetic is that they aren't aware of the fact that we exist. And so what the mayor and the city attorney did was they created a website and an entire initiative to help Angelenos connect with legal services agencies. So anybody with a legal question could go to this one place and find out how to get connected with a free legal aid attorney. And here's the other part, what they were brilliant about. They realized that the need would be overwhelming. Even before COVID-19, the statistics already showed that for every one legal aid attorney, there were well over 8,000 eligible clients. That's before COVID-19. And so they realized, well, if they were going to create this website where people could more easily connect with legal aid organizations, how are we going to meet that need? And so what they did is they managed to secure commitments from dozens and dozens of law firms across Los Angeles that would be willing to provide pro bono representation to individuals facing unlawful detainers, domestic violence, or any other legal issue. And as you noted, our Betzetic's particular role in this initiative has been to support small businesses. So it has meant that we have partnered with major international law firms like O'Melveny & Myers, Gibson Dunn, Latham & Watkins, Skadden Arps, to name just a few. And they have been helping us by representing these small businesses in resolving their legal issues.
Seeing that you also assist undocumented immigrants, low-wage workers, homeless families, what are you seeing the impact of COVID-19 on those groups?
I think many of your listeners are probably already aware of from the news and newspapers, the disparate impact that COVID-19 has had on immigrant communities and communities of color. When it comes to workers, it's been well documented now, right, that those individuals, those workers that are dubbed essential workers, are largely immigrants and people of color. And these are the immigrants and individuals that we saw prior to COVID-19 in our employment rights clinic, who were already subject to wage theft, for example. And so the disparate impact has meant that, number one, when many individuals were left unemployed, if you were an undocumented immigrant, it meant that you did not have access to unemployment insurance. And so we worked hard to, for example, set up an alternate unemployment insurance program in California. And we were successful in getting some legislation passed that allowed for checks to be sent to those families, one-time checks. But in addition to the unemployment issues, they are the population that are facing highest incidence of the threat of eviction. It's immigrants and communities of color. And of course, many of your listeners will know that the numbers are out, and it's clear that it's communities of color that have been most impacted directly by the pandemic, higher incidence of COVID-19 infections in these communities. So it's been a struggle after struggle, and our agencies like BETSEDIC and our sister organizations like Public Counsel, Legal Aid of Los Angeles, Inner City Law Center, what we're trying to do is work collaboratively and strategically to meet the community need. So for example, we're banding together to help strategically represent clients across LA County on eviction matters. And what I mean by strategically is determining who is best suited to help clients in particular pockets of the community, because either we have a physical location there, we have partnerships with local agencies, as opposed to all trying to cover the entire county all at once.
Who qualifies for your services and how do they apply?
Individuals are eligible for our services, number one, regardless of race, religion, ethnicity, or immigration status, as you noted earlier. An individual must be low income, and the definition of low income varies depending on the program that we would assist them through. And what I mean by that is, by and large, for most of our programs, our eligibility guidelines revolve around federal poverty guideline levels. You have to be, for example, below 100% of federal poverty guideline levels. When it comes to other programs, for example, our elder abuse prevention work, the eligibility guidelines are vastly different. As long as you are 65 and older, and for example, are receiving some form of government assistance, or we can see that an individual is frail, disabled, monolingual, or non-English speaking, I should say, and various other factors allow them to qualify. I should know, people are probably curious, well, if those are the eligibility standards, how does a small business qualify?
Yeah, my next question.
Yeah. So there we have a vastly different rubric. For the small businesses, basically the household income must be below 500% of federal poverty guideline levels, which roughly translates to about a maximum of $85,000 a year for a family of four. And then we do look at the profits and sales of the business itself.
So in the history of BETSEDIC, you were the first non-Jewish CEO, the first person to lead the organization. And you've been with the organization for a while now.
That's correct. Yeah, I've been with the organization for 8 years.
And you're an immigrant yourself.
I am.
How did you come to work for this organization? What was the attraction for you?
In so many ways, the attraction was the Jewish values that form the foundation of the organization. I'll give you an example to tie it back to the question of the undocumented immigrants that we assist. In Jewish religion and culture, there is a belief of you don't turn away a stranger from a strange land. And it's tied to the history of the Jewish people and traveling from and being refugees from different lands. And so that, as an immigrant myself, hits very close to home. I remember arriving here in the United States and really relying on the generosity of relatives. Obviously, those aren't strangers, but in addition to relatives, people who were just willing to help. And so when I first started off as a legal aid attorney, that is how I saw my role. My role was not to come in as the savior for my client, to dictate the terms of how my client's life or case or life was going to be run, but rather to help. And I would try to help by, number one, educating my client as to their rights and responsibilities, and number two, listening to them and what their goals were, and then working collaboratively with them to try and achieve those goals. And at that moment in time, my work focused on helping pregnant and parenting teenagers. So, you know, their goals were things like establishing a reasonable visitation order for the other party to have contact with their child. And now I've tried to carry that forward in the work that we have been doing more recently. I think it ties in quite well with our small business work, right? Our goal is not to tell the small business owner, well, you should stay in this building, or, well, you shouldn't sell this, but instead you should sell that. Our goal is to sit down with them and say, how can we help you? What are the dreams that you want to achieve? And we'll lay out the steps that we think you need to take from a legal perspective to achieve those dreams. And we help them step by step to do that. So again, it's all about the principles and the foundations that form the agency that really speak to me. And I should note, really speak to so many of our staff. So many of our staff are proud about the roots of our organization. The fact that, for example, two or three decades ago, our board had a very difficult choice to make. They were presented with the opportunity to receive a significant amount of ongoing federal funds that would have created an incredible financial foundation for the institution. But those funds came with restrictions, such as not being able to serve undocumented immigrants. And the board said, no, that is against our principles. It is against our beliefs. And so they turned that money away. And that is profound to be able to take that stance. And it's very empowering to work at an agency that has that kind of moral principle. And we're all very proud of it.
What are your hopes for the organization moving forward?
When I was interviewing for this position and first took the reins, my vision for the organization was, I felt like it was a relatively modest vision. And that was, I told the board of directors as when they were interviewing me, if you want someone to come in here and month after month, come up with new programs, new initiatives, I'm not really the right person for the job. I'm not the right person for the role. As much as I enjoy doing that, which I really do love, new ways of serving the community. I said that I felt like my role was, you know, to look back and realize, number one, that we had gone through tremendous growth. About 4 years ago, we were at about 60 or so staff members. And as I mentioned earlier, now we're over 90. We've seen tremendous growth. And my vision was to first stabilize the organization and make sure that level of growth was sustainable, and then really focus on making sure that Betsedic was top of mind for any legal issue that we tackle. So, for example, on the small business front, if the city, the county, and perhaps even at some point the state of California, let's say the governor, says, you know, what are we doing to help support small business owners with their legal issues, I want Betsedic to be top of mind when that question comes up. When the governor is thinking about the master plan for aging in California, I want Betsedic to be top of mind. So my vision is all about stabilizing the organization, making sure we can stay at this level while also supporting our staff so that they can be experts in their field. They can be leading the charge on the deployment of legal services in their fields and then making Betsedic top of mind by virtue of the work that the staff is doing.
I think what you're doing with the small businesses and with all the groups that you represent is fantastic. And I hope other people listening to this, there are groups out there that might want to replicate this, because I think keeping our small businesses going is very important.
Well, thank you. We're, like I said, we're very proud of it. We're thrilled to be a part of the ecosystem that is trying to support small businesses, make sure they thrive. And if we are doing our job well, can actually come out of this in a better place. So we appreciate the opportunity to bring awareness about this issue.
Diego, thank you very much for joining Work in Progress.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That was Diego Cartagena, the president and CEO of Betsedic. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, editor-in-chief of Working Nation. My producer is Larry Buell. Our executive producers are Joan Lynch and Melissa Panzer. Thank you for listening.